You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 45.
He would tell us some of the biggest pain points from our most influential users. But it felt like we weren't listening to them at the same time.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
All right. This episode's by popular demand. I mean, it was my idea, so I take credit for it, but it's something that a lot of people were interested in. Today, we are talking to Maryam Ali about her 18 months at Google, and we're going to find out what it's really like on the inside. You notice that this episode is a little bit longer than usual because there was a lot of ground to cover, so I really want to take my time and dive deep into all these issues because some of them are, I don't know, multidimensional. I guess that's a word that I like. Okay, so just so you know, if you're interested in a specific issue and you want to make sure that it's covered here, I'm going to give you a list of things that we talked about. One, we talked about Google's interview and recruitment process and what's that like. Two, we talked about security and privacy inside Google. Three, we covered, you know, what is the atmosphere like around the Google product teams and the decisions we make? That's been a perennial issue on the show ever since episode 36, the Google Graveyard, about the passing of Google Plus. Number four, we covered bias in the search engine, how it could get there and how employees approach it. We covered this before on the Local Maximum, more generally, not with regard to Google, in episode 33, ads, bias, censorship, democracy. We've got a Google-specific discussion today, of course. And finally, number five, we're going to talk about what it was like inside Google during the James Damore memo and the effect it's had. And along those lines, we covered Google's specific approach to running a diverse workplace, you know, whether or not you'd say it's a success or failure. So that's the order we're going in if you want to find your favorite part or the part that you're interested in. I'm trying to focus on the insider view here and getting my guest's perspective. It's tough to get that in a world of, you know, journalists or, you know, more disgruntled employees who kind of have an axe to grind. So, and I also want to point out that Maryam was my first guest on the Local Maximum and is also my first returning guest. So you can go back to episode 2 on building international applications to hear more from Maryam. All right, Maryam Ali is a software engineer and professional foosball player. Not a lot of people know that. They will now. In June 2012, she joined Foursquare as the first female engineer after getting a Bachelor in Science in Computer Science at Carnegie Mellon. During her tenure, she worked on local search, internationalization, infrastructure, and outreach. After 4.5 years at Foursquare, she also did some natural language processing with me, I think. Isn't that right? Yeah. So she was, after 4.5 years at Foursquare, I have a habit of interrupting myself when I'm doing the bio, so that always happens. After 4.5 years at Foursquare, she was a full stack developer on the Google Forms team for 18 months before taking on competitive foosball full time for half a year. Starting Monday, she will be rejoining us at Foursquare to work on back end for the core business. All right, Maryam, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Local Maximum.
Thank you.
Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
I'm excited to have you on the show. A lot of people want to hear about your time at Google. I got a lot of response from the internet. I usually have kind of a time limit on these shows. I try to keep it, but I don't know how long this is going to take. But I think today we're going to keep it slow because there's a lot that I want to cover, and so let's just talk for as long as you want or as short as you want. I'm not going to rush you. I'm not going to stop you. And how does that sound?
It sounds perfect.
All right. Great. Cool. So let's start. I got like 3 pages of notes here. That's a record. All right. I want to start by, before we get into Google, I want to start by talking about you because there are a lot of stereotypes that I think come up in people's mind when they think Google engineer. You didn't grow up in an environment where you were offered to go to computer class or science camp or anything like that. Is that right?
That's mostly right. I did have the opportunity to take AP Computer Science in high school, but before that, no.
So is that when you first learned to code then in high school in your class?
Yes.
Okay, and that's what got you into math and science?
I was already into math. Yeah. But that was my first foray into anything related to computers.
Cool. So how did you end up at Carnegie Mellon then?
A lot of luck. it's a funny story, actually. My theater teacher encouraged me to apply.
Interesting.
Not my math teachers. Not...
So you did theater too. I did theater.
Yeah. I did theater for a long time.
What play were you in? You were in a lot of plays, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Why? How come we haven't talked about this?
I don't know. I guess I was really into it in junior high and high school, but yeah, only through this one particular group. And it was, I had the same teacher from 7th grade till 12th grade in theater.
Which play did you guys do? Come on, I want to know. You don't have just name me one. Give me one.
Blackout.
Okay, I haven't heard of it. But I haven't seen it. I think I've heard of it. But. Okay, cool. So you went to Carnegie Mellon, and you ended up majoring in computer science.
Yes.
And you had a bunch of years at Foursquare. Then you were at Google for 1 year in 2017. That's right, 1 year, 12 months.
It was longer than that. So I started almost exactly 2 years ago.
Okay.
That was my first day. So at the end of 2016. And my last day was May 4th this year.
Okay. So a little more than a year. Was there anything in particular that attracted you to Google when you were doing your job search?
If I'm being honest, salaries.
Yeah.
That was a big thing.
But you could have gone to Facebook. You could have gone to Instagram.
Yeah, that's true.
Amazon.
I definitely wasn't optimizing for salary, but
yeah,
it was one of could the have, draws.
Could have done a hedge fund.
the other big thing, though, was impact.
Yeah.
So Google obviously has a lot of users, but also it's very influential within the tech community.
Yeah.
So my thought was... I could have some potential impact on the whole tech industry if I had impacted Google.
Right. So you went to interview at Google sometime in 2016.
Yes.
What was your interview like?
Honestly, I didn't have a very good experience.
No? Well, tell me about it.
Yeah, so I went to the office, and the recruiter was actually really cool. And I got interviewed by 5 different people in 45-minute interviews. And I had a nice lunch with a former Foursquare employee. And that was all nice.
Yeah.
But I had some interesting things happen during my interview process. So one of these 5 interviewers was a woman who, after I did well during the interview process, she started talking to me about how bad Google is for women.
Wow. Well, we'll get into that more, but real, what did she say?
I honestly don't remember all that much, but she talks some about her personal experience and how it's difficult. But I think she was really trying to sell me, but more like, all right, these things have happened and
this
need
is the
more.
Negative, yeah.
Yeah.
But she's saying we need you to help fix this.
Yeah, exactly.
What was her particular complaint, if you remember? If you're allowed to say.
I honestly don't remember. I can talk more about about some stuff later.
All right, we'll get into that. So it's always hard when you're, assigned to do interviews, and then sometimes you're really into selling the company, but there are some days where you're just not, you're not always in the mood to do it every day. So
right.
It's hard. So what else happened in the interview? Did they ask good technical questions? Or
They asked standard technical and algorithmic questions.
Was it just that one thing that was off, or was there anything
else? No. I had another interviewer who was a bit combative. And actually, after that interview, I really thought I wasn't going to get the job.
Do you think it was that it was like a face they were putting on, or do you think that it was someone who was just a combative person?
It's really hard to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what do you when you say they were combative, like in what way? Were they like, that's not right? Or were they like not heckling you as you were doing the problem, but being like dismissing whatever you say? Or was it more like when you were asking questions outside of the technical problem?
I was asking some like follow-up questions. Like
to their questions?
Yeah. I was trying to dig deeper into what they were asking me to do, kind of clarifying the question. And I don't know if maybe I asked a dumb question. I'm not sure. But he got more and more annoyed as I, or he seemed more and more annoyed the more questions that I asked.
But was he unclear? You were asking questions, I assume, because he was unclear in the initial setup.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Did you ever work with any of these people after you got into Google?
As far as I know, I never saw them again.
So you never saw them again. They basically appeared and then disappeared.
Yeah.
After you did the interview.
You know, I don't remember their faces specifically. I don't remember their names. And so I could have seen them in the office afterwards and just not.
Yeah, that guy looks familiar. But is that common at Google where you go on a team and the people in the team don't meet you beforehand to interview you? It's like other people?
So during the interview process, you do meet your team ahead of time, from industry hires at least.
Okay.
But they don't interview you per se. It's like you go through the technical interview process, then once you've passed that.
And that's like other people that are disconnected.
Yeah, that's like whoever. You go through the standard software engineering process. Then you go through team matching. And during the team matching phase, that's when you meet potential teams. And then you both say, like, whether or not you think it's a good fit.
Hmm. Did you interview other people when you were at Google?
I did one interview my last week.
That's interesting. They let you do interviews when you're already leaving. Or they didn't know.
I assume that the recruiting team did not know.
I gotcha. Yeah. But someone knew. Or no.
Someone knew.
I feel like wireless generation, at least, I left and I had a few weeks later, and it was a breath of fresh air because they took all my, they like immediately took all my interviews down, and I was like, yes.
Yeah, so I did that interview because I didn't leave Google because I hated it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This is not a, I think a lot of the information that you get out there from ex-employees is often like disgruntled ex-employee. Yeah. And I think one of the people why a lot of people want to listen to you is that I think you can provide, I'm about to say the word objective, and I think that's kind of right, but kind of maybe a more balanced view than you might get.
Yeah, balance otherwise. Is probably right. Objective, yeah. I'm not
get,
a robot.
We want to get your impression today. I think that would be very helpful. So tell me about the interview roundups at Google. What happens in there? You have a bunch of people saying, is this guy googly? Begin.
So interview roundups, there's an assumption there.
Yeah.
So at Foursquare, we do interview roundups in person. At Google, you do not meet with the other interviewers.
Okay.
You write an assessment. And then another group called the hiring committee reviews your assessment, and they try to be objective.
So they read your text.
Yes.
You write, like, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So you do a write-up on the individual, and then another group looks at your write-up and then determines whether or not
So you have no idea. So once you do your write-up, that's it. You don't see that again.
Yep.
So in some ways, that takes off the stress of, well, there is always that thing in the back of your mind if you have to meet up again later, well, is mine going to be very different from other people's? And this has happened to me where my assessment was different from everyone else's. So people turn to me and say, like, you know, why are you, what are you seeing that we're not? Yeah. And then I either have to be like, look, man, I was exhausted. I have no idea what I saw. Or I have a strong opinion. But it's like, yeah.
It was designed in this way to try to be more objective and take out some of the biases. But it's also, I don't know how I feel about it. I kind of have mixed feelings about the whole hiring committee thing, because then you can't defend your candidate either.
Right. So if you think this guy is amazing, I want him on my team or her on my team. Sorry. But like, it's like you can't really do that.
Yeah. And there have definitely been times where at Foursquare, I think I was the... I've been the one voice in the room to say no, or the one voice in the room to say yes.
Yeah, I have too.
And it's interesting that you just have to make sure that you put a lot more information into your write-up.
Right, but you don't know whether you're going to be that person beforehand. Sometimes.
Exactly. So it's almost like you have to be more proactive about what you write and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like the majority of the time you're kind of. Yeah, they passed my interview, but let's see what happens kind of a thing. So it's like, So in those ones, you don't have to worry. It's when you kind of know when you're sticking your neck out. Do you think that, like, the interviewers have a veto? Like, if you interview someone and say, definitely not, do you think the hiring committee sees that and says, okay, I guess they're out? Or do they actually look at the positive ones as well?
I'm sure they look at the positive ones as well, because they don't want to introduce bias. And it could be that someone's saying definitely not for a really dumb reason.
Yeah. Are people kind of petty like that? Like what would be a dumb reason that you think people might put?
I mean, it could just be that they're a bad interviewer. It's not necessarily because they're like, for example, someone coming right out of school. So you have to be at Google for a year before you can interview. But someone came right out of school. They were themselves part of really, really bad interview processes, maybe. Then they come up with a question that's not very good.
And it's easy to botch the question too. I do that on the show a lot. I botch the question.
Yeah. And it could be they're asking something too specific. And they're like, well, why isn't the candidate getting this?
Here's like the one thing that I know. Why don't they know the one thing that I know? Type of a thing too.
These people could be like very good engineers, just not good at interviewing, because they're separate skills, right?
Yeah. So do you think that their recruiting and hiring process, I said you're kind of, you're not over the moon about it. What do you think is the biggest issue there? Like, what's your impression of, like, how, do you think they're hiring the right people? Do you think they're missing people that they should be hiring? Do you think
they're absolutely missing people that they should be hiring?
And do you think they're just not getting those people in the door? Or do you think once they get in the door, they're just kind of falling, that they're just not being treated fairly by the interview process?
Fairly is an interesting word.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the interview process isn't fair per se. It's more like there are people who are really good software engineers that are never going to be good at interviewing at Google.
Do you think that there could be good engineers who might not be good at working at Google either, but do you think that there's a disconnect between good at interviewing and good at working? I feel like there is
definitely a disconnect.
There is in every company, though. But you think there's something in particular about Google's hiring process?
I think one thing about Google is that they can rely on the fact that so many people apply, that if they let good people fall through the cracks, it's not a big deal because they get so many good applicants.
Yeah.
And I think that they rely on that a lot. There are definitely a lot of great people who fall through the cracks. I know plenty of great people who have interviewed at Google and not gotten the job, but have gone on after not getting that interview, like maybe within the same month getting hired by Instagram or at Foursquare and then excelling at those companies.
Right. You mentioned like kind of a grumpy interviewer, and I've known people who have experienced that at Google. Like, how is that like a good face to put on? It doesn't seem like a good face to put on the company if you have, like, you know, people coming and interviewing people that are just kind of grumpy or combative or whatever. Is there anyone telling engineers who are doing interviews, like, this is how to conduct an interview? Do they give you do they give you general overviews of what not to do, or do they just say, go, I have no input? Or,
they have a class, actually, that you have to take in order to be an interviewer.
Okay.
Then you have to go through a shadowing process, so you have to observe other people conducting interviews. Then other people have to observe you conducting interviews. So they do have a formal process, but that's not going to prevent grumpy interviewers, because you're going to have bad days sometimes.
Yeah.
And it could be that also people put on their best face when they're being watched.
Right.
Even if they're not like mindful of it.
Yeah.
So that I'm sure that that's part of it too. Yeah. Another thing, the incentives around interviewing aren't very good.
For the interviewer or the interviewee?
For the interviewer.
Yeah, so the person giving the interview.
Yeah, yeah. So you're incentivized to spend as little time as possible with the candidate, because generally interviews aren't, they're not helping your team specifically.
Oh, I see. So it's like, well, you're kind of measured on how you help your team. And so this is just time that, you know, maybe you get a checkbox off that you did this, but it doesn't matter whether you did a good or bad job.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so you can't really blame people for not putting more effort into being a good interviewer, because it's not going to help them excel at Google if they're a better interviewer.
I see. I mean, it's important. I mean, that's an important thing that a company does, is interviewing. So it's
So that's something. That's something that bothered me a little bit. Because I talked to so many people who just didn't prepare for interviews, and I saw it in my own interviewers. Like, one guy came in, and he didn't know what question he was going to ask me. When he first walked in the door, he was like, oh, what am I going to ask? And it actually gave me a little bit of anxiety.
I mean, I do that sometimes, but I'm really good at coming up with something on the spot that nobody ever suspects. But that's the podcaster in me. So
It made me feel like he totally didn't prepare, because he clearly didn't. He hadn't looked at my resume at all before walking into the room.
You at least want to say, hey, I read your resume. Interviewers maybe don't need to read them that carefully. You just want to get a good sense of where this person's coming from. Yeah, sometimes I want to hear someone tell me, you know, their career in their own words. Sometimes more helpful than a resume to see what they focus on.
That's true, for sure. There's a tech influencer, Huston.
Kate Hudson some other celebrity?
Kate Hudson is an actress. Kate Huston is, she's a software engineer who has written a lot of articles on like tech culture, but I really enjoy her perspective on interviewing. And one thing that she said in one of her writings from years ago is that, like, for an interviewee, the interview is probably the most important thing that they're doing that day.
Right.
And that really struck me. I hadn't really thought about it like that before. I mean, I've always cared about candidates, but that...
For some people, it's the most important thing they're doing that week or even that year.
Yeah. And especially Google's one of those companies that is a dream for some people. Like, it's their dream to work there.
Right.
And the fact that some people come into the room with no preparation, or they're grumpy. Like, I'm sure that they're not thinking about that from the candidate's perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. I always get more nervous when I'm interviewing someone than when I'm being interviewed. I feel like if I'm being interviewed, it's kind of fun. It's like a game. When I'm interviewing someone, I'm cognizant of the fact that I'm representing the company. And also I'm cognizant of the fact that, you know, there are certain legal requirements on me, and there are certain... I guess, professionalism requirements on me. When I'm being interviewed, I feel free. There's literally nothing I could say that's illegal if I'm interviewing at a company. I love that asymmetry.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. But
the legal stuff is pretty straightforward.
Right. I feel freer when I'm being interviewed, because I just, like, okay, the worst thing that can happen is not being hired. But I guess if you put all your eggs in this one basket and this is your dream, then it is nerve-wracking. And I think another thing that it could even throw me off is if someone comes in and you could tell they're either combative or there's something about them that's off, then I can go from relaxed to nervous very quickly.
Yeah.
All right. So I think anything else on the recruitment process before we go on? We can go on, because I got a lot. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I feel like there was something else that I wanted to say. Oh, it can be really long.
Yeah.
So one thing that Google is working on is making the process take less time. Which I think part of the problem is that write-up process. Like, after you give an interview, you have to do that write-up, and it takes a lot of time. And really, probably what they should do is just, instead of scheduling a 45-minute interview, they schedule 2 hours on your calendar so that you have enough time. They find like a 2-hour block where you're free so that you have enough time to do the write-up.
Yeah, I love when I have a 1-hour interview and then someone schedules like, oh, can I talk to you for the 20 minutes beforehand? I'll slip it in your calendar. And it's like then you're just running. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, please give me this space.
Yeah. That's always a problem when all the meetings kind of stack up against each other. Then you know you have too many meetings.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that and what the life is of kind of a middle manager, upper manager. Maybe it's anyway. Okay, so let's move on. I also want to ask, like, you start at Google, first few weeks, first month. Did anything surprise you in your first few weeks?
Yes, there were a few things. Like, one, the free food is like better than I anticipated. Like, it's so good.
Yeah, I was there on Friday last week. And yeah, it's pretty good. Just grab a plate and it's not just like, good cafeteria food. It's like being at a nice restaurant every day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
So that was one thing. The food was great.
And there are healthy options.
Yes. It's really easy to eat healthy at Google.
That's good.
Another was the emphasis on user privacy. Before joining, I didn't really think about it that hard, but I almost like assumed that they looked at some of my Google history as a candidate. Like I thought maybe they looked at what accounts I had or something.
Yeah. Or what I searched. Oh God.
Thank God they did not. Yeah. Do that. No, but that's like, if someone tried to do that, they would get fired 100%.
Yeah.
Like 100% they would be fired.
Well, could you try? Is it set up so you really can't try to do that? Or is
it's possible. So I was on the forms team.
Like if you put in a query that you can't do and it comes back, sorry, that you're not allowed, do you then get in trouble? Or it's like, hey, I guess I'm not allowed, whatever.
Oh, no, it's more like I'm not allowed. But like I was on the forms team, for example. And so I could look up specific user information about forms.
Right.
But if I looked up that information on a specific user for some personal reason, even if the personal reason was related to like hiring a candidate, like I would get fired.
So it would be like a customer request. They have to, can you look into someone's form even if they didn't request it?
It depends on the situation. Like there has to be some valid reason. Like either, so I was on the on-call rotation, for example. So I could look up form information if I got paged while being on call. So if something broke, like to the point where a user couldn't access a form or it was degrading service for a lot of users, then I could look into it. Or if a specific user had an issue, then I could look into it. But I couldn't look at all information on the form, even in that situation. Like there was always some information that was hidden. Like it was always on a need to know basis.
Yeah.
And I only looked at, like, I only got access to all form information for internal users who had issues, and only if they specifically gave me access.
Is there some kind of like, you know, kind of government clearance thing where the higher you get or the longer you stay, you get more security privileges? Or is that how does it work for people who are like the people running the whole forms team or the people running the whole docs team?
No, what do they do? They don't get more access. I mean, they might have like some of the more veteran forms people probably also have some access to other Google Docs like Sheets.
Right.
Or probably only Sheets, but not still only need to know. And it's not so, like you accumulate more security clearance over time because everything has a shelf life.
But what, like, there is a security team dealing with this.
Yes.
So who does that? Like, what are they? They might have access to things. Or are they all kind of checking on each other? They sort of like have logs of what everyone's doing.
So there's a whole team at Google that focuses on internal risk.
Okay.
So there's a team that looks at the logs of your access.
Yeah. So they will look at your logs specifically for you. Like they will do, this is today we're going to look at Miriam's logs and see what's up.
No, it's more like there's an automated process that flags certain things. So if I if I did a query on a specific user, like that might get flagged.
Okay.
And then they'll look at that specific query, and in theory, if I'm a good actor, that so in actuality, when I was like doing my job, if I had a query on a specific user, it was because there was some like. Something that broke related to that user. And so I would have an ID for the page that required me to make that request. But even if there is an ID, if they see a pattern, like, oh, wait, she did this request for this user, like, three times this month, like that's kind of weird, or three times this year.
Yeah.
And then they look up the user ID and it turns out that user is a celebrity. Like that might be a situation, or maybe it's not a celebrity. Maybe it's another Google employee. Like, okay, why is she doing this?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it could be simply that the Google employee is asking for a favor to like fix their form, but
that wouldn't,
that wouldn't be allowed. Okay. So, there have been kind of security breaches in Google. There was the Google Plus. I don't really know exactly what happened there. But is that the same team or is that a different team that kind of worries about that?
Different team. Yeah. Okay. Google has a lot of different security teams.
Do you have much insight into what was going on there? Or?
I don't know which incident you're referring to.
Google Plus has been on the news for... they're shutting it down faster now because of a security issue, like user data was leaked.
I see.
So,
The team that dealt with that was probably the security team for Google Plus. That's
right.
That would be what I would guess, which is totally separate from this internal risk team.
Right. Okay. Interesting. All right. So I want to turn to, speaking of Google Plus, I do want to turn to Google's product development process, because that's one thing that we've been talking a lot about on the show. You know, how did these new products come out? Why does it seem like across the board in tech, we're getting less new products now? So you were on the Google Forms team. And for those of you who are unaware, there's Google Docs, Google Sheets, Google Presentations. But Forms is kind of an additional one that's maybe a little more hidden because it's not when I click over. It only shows me those three. Yeah. But you could actually have Forms to send to a bunch of people, and then it fills in a spreadsheet for you.
Yeah, it's just a general survey tool.
Yeah, survey tool. So that's part of the larger Google Docs team, right?
Yes.
Okay. So from my point of view, and tell me if I'm wrong or tell me if it seems like these products have not changed that much in the last decade, just from like my personal usage, but I know that sometimes there's a lot going on under the hood. So do you think that the product roadmap is aggressive enough? What do you think is the, why do you think there's that perception?
That's a really interesting question. These teams are always adding new features. It's frequently under the hood. And a lot of times what's happening is that they're making redesigns associated with infrastructure changes. So the user would never see those updates. Like,
in other
never
words,
know that those updates.
It might run faster. It might make it easier for you to debug problems.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. And you need to do that from time to time, particularly when you have a very old product. It's important to go through these maintenance things.
Yes.
But you kind of hope that it leads to cooler things you could do with the product in the future.
Yeah. But I do think that a lot of these teams are doing a lot of cool new features. But one of the problems is awareness. Like, how do you tell the user about these cool new features, especially if the like large visual hasn't changed very much? Like, how does the user know that these new features
are maybe there? Help give us an example of something that was released to the public, you know, when you were there or even in the last year. For Forms, maybe, or Google Docs in general.
So one of the things that we released while I was there that I had the opportunity to work on was adding a question type to the survey tool, allowing users to upload files.
I see. Yeah, that's helpful. Like, hey, upload an image of yourself or something, or upload.
Yeah. The feature upload, already existed.
Upload your resume if it's like a.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that feature already existed for a particular business. Like if Foursquare, for example, uses Google Docs.
Right. Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. So internally, we could have used that feature, but. It was actually a big engineering effort to make it available to any user.
Right.
And there was a lot that went into it. And I think when a user opens up a new form, it's like maybe a modal came up to say like, okay, here's this new thing, but who actually reads those? Like you just X out of those immediately. So you can see that there's a new question type, but if you don't know that it's new,
it just doesn't seem like anything's changed. I mean, exactly. I don't use Google Forms that much. I actually don't really use it at all. So,
right.
Because I don't have kind of a use case for it. Maybe I will use Google Forms though to send out a survey for this show. But we'll see. I don't think I need to have people upload files. But then I might start noticing changes. One thing that I noticed haven't changed because I've been using Google Docs for years and years for all my engineering documents.
Yeah.
The equation editor why has the equation editor just kind of languished? I feel like there were lots of bugs in it maybe that were fixed, but it seems like it's kind of hard to use. And is it because I'm the only one using it? Everyone else just likes to use LaTeX instead and just not use I don't know why it is.
That would be my guess.
So basically, like no one uses, I'm the only one who uses the Google, the equation editor?
That's probably not true. You're probably not the only one. But, you know, there's more important things to work on. So there are add-ons.
Yeah.
And if an add-on solves a problem, then...
Yeah. Then there is an add-on where I can get a better equation editor?
I think so.
Oh.
I think so because I'm not 100% sure. Yeah. I know that there's one for Google Forms.
Yeah.
And so if there's one for Google Forms, there has to be one for Google
The problem Docs. With LaTeX is it's not, you know, I can't put it up. Google Docs is nice because I can edit it from anywhere.
Yes.
I can have people collaborate with me.
Yeah.
You can't do that with just a document, so like text document.
You can, but you'd have to put it on GitHub or something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's not...
Yeah, exactly. It's a much better interface.
Yeah. Agreed. So I'm surprised that it's not as popular a feature. I guess that's just for me. I guess it's always like my feature isn't being worked on, so I'm angry type of thing.
this always happens.
Yeah. All right. So how much of the time is spent on like political arguments for the direction of these products, or do you just kind of go and implement what the team wants?
So what's interesting, at Google, we had a lot less say on the product roadmap than at Foursquare. And I think even on my team, we probably had more say than a lot of other teams. We would have brainstorming sessions on things we could do. But ultimately, a lot of the roadmap was driven top down.
I see.
And as an individual contributor, you really just don't have that much say in how the product's going to change.
Have you been in any of the product roadmap meetings?
That's an interesting, not in the way that we had them at Foursquare.
Okay. Well, I was asking, are they boring meetings or are they animated, especially when there's a disagreement?
So we had a meeting that we called Moonshots.
Okay.
For forms where we talked about like what are some crazy ideas for things that we could do with forms in the future.
Yeah.
And we would like each person came with some ideas and we kind of talked through them, and some of those ideas ended up forming the roadmap, but it was definitely, it wasn't like we were planning the roadmap in that meeting. It was more like a, like what's possible to do.
Well, that sounds like a more fun meeting, but yeah. I'm saying, but I feel like then they're like, okay, then the real people get to get, this happens to me a lot where they ask me for fun ideas, but then the other people get together and make the decision.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes those meetings, you can always, there are two types of product meetings when there's disagreements. It's either animated and everyone's excited, or it's just boring and it's a bunch of people and then like somebody sits there in 10 minutes and explains in a monotone voice why we need to do it that way, and that's it. But I was just wondering if you because it's almost like there's two types of engineers. What did you find? I guess you weren't involved maybe in those arguments as much, but what how do you think it goes? Or you don't have to answer this question if you don't want, but
I honestly couldn't say.
Pass.
Yeah, pass.
All right. We already covered on the show Google Plus and Google Hangouts being shut down. Mm-hmm. And I guess my question is, do you think there's something inherent in Google's product and engineering culture that is contributing to these outcomes? And I think the other part of that question that I don't have written here is like sometimes it's like, okay, you try some things and they don't work and that's kind of expected. But do you think there was something they could have done in their product and engineering culture that would have made these more likely to be successful?
So I feel like I only worked on forms. Okay. And so I can only really speak to Google Apps.
Tell us about your experience in forms and how it relates to this, and then how it relates to Google Plus and Google Hangouts, we can kind of speculate. But you're here to tell us your experience. So give us your experience.
So for us, it just felt very siloed between engineering, marketing, and even like user feedback. It felt very...
So you didn't really hear a lot of user feedback.
We did hear some, for sure. There was a community guy who we had a meeting with every week, and he would tell us some of the biggest pain points from our most influential users.
Yeah.
And that was very, very good. But I also, it felt like we weren't listening to them at the same time.
Right.
Or at least not prioritizing user feedback as much as we should have.
Hmm.
I don't want to criticize too much because I know that
sometimes you got to, as we know in Foursquare, like sometimes you got to focus on certain things and users can push you in many different directions.
Yeah, exactly. But it definitely felt like user feedback was not, or user happiness was not as important as it should have been.
So if that wasn't important, what was important?
It was more important finding new business opportunities.
Okay.
So new business opportunities were more important than user satisfaction.
So get everyone in. Don't necessarily keep them happy, but get them in, and then they kind of stay there, and then get new people in.
Yeah, yeah, and that's specific to forms,
right?
And probably all of the Google Docs, Drive, Sheet, Slides. Like, I kind of got that vibe from all of those groups. And I do want to say too that the forms team was a really great team, and I feel like We did listen to each other a lot on the engineering side. I know it's sounding like oh, we don't listen to our users. We did listen to users internally, and we listened to each other a lot. And I think like the team dynamics for that team specifically were really good.
Okay.
It's just like engineering was siloed from marketing and product.
Gotcha.
More so than what my experience at Foursquare was.
Cool. Cool. All right. Well, we'll see what happens when you come back. You'll see it. You'll get to tell us how things have changed.
It could be totally different.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So now let's go to the search product. This is what the people want to know. The results and autocorrect suggestions can actually change the way that people see the world. How do the people working on this think about the weight of what they're doing?
That is a great question. I honestly don't have very much insight into the search team.
Yeah.
I know a few people who have worked on search either currently or in the past. But my guess would be that a lot of people don't think about it. They probably think about their day-to-day stuff more than their impact on society.
Millions and millions of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did watch Sundar Pichai at, you know, parts of his thing in on Congress the other day. So he says that Google can't manipulate individual search results. Do you think that the Google search team helps out certain organizations who want things scrubbed from their results or think they're being treated unfairly?
I don't think they play favorites. I would assume that they do.
Do you think they ever, not advertently, but like, Do you think they say, oh, wow, this is like super unfair. We've got to fix this. Or do they say, hey, we just have a roadmap, and if it's unfair, it's unfair. It's sorry, you're screwed.
I'm sure that while they're testing changes to algorithms, they probably have a list of queries that they do sanity checks with.
Yeah.
And so they could play favorites in that way.
Yeah, because we have sanity checks at Foursquare with certain like restaurants and stuff.
Yeah. So that's why, when we think about Foursquare, when we were working on Foursquare Search, for example, we did a lot of queries in New York.
Right.
And we did a lot of sanity checks within New York. And so Foursquare, I'm sure, worked better in New York than anywhere else.
Yeah.
For that reason. And there could be something similar happening with testing. Although the testing at Google is much more complex and complete than right. any of the testing that we've done at Foursquare.
Okay, so now if people want to know about political bias. I'm not gonna ask, does Google have political bias? But I want to know how the people think about their job there. So do the people at Google consider the fact that their results might have a political bias, or is this just considered kind of, you know, impossibility given the way that we do things here?
I'm sure that some people believe that there is political bias
at Google.
Yes, at Google. I'm sure that there are employees who believe that. There are many ways that it can leak in, but it's not from like one individual.
Yeah,
it would come in through, bad sampling, for example, or like biased input to machine learning algorithms.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Do you think that these questions get more direct now? Do you think that employees take complaints from Democrats more seriously than complaints from Republicans when it comes to search results, or vice versa?
Sorry. Yeah. Almost turned over my glass of water. That's a really good question. And it's hard for me to say, because I think that there are most certainly some Republicans who work on search, and there are most certainly some Democrats who work on search.
Right.
And I'm sure that for the individual, they're going to take the complaints of their party more seriously.
Yeah.
And I do think that there are complaints on both sides.
People don't realize that there could be problems on both sides, to get into the gender issue that we're going to talk about. People think like a workplace can either be pro man or pro woman, but it's possible that you could have problems for both genders. So, it is possible to have problems that are kind of different for both sides in politics as well.
Right. I think, my political... My political beliefs are going to bias my answer to this too. Like, I think that I personally think that the issues with right-wing news articles are much worse than the problems that are associated with...
What do you mean issues with, like, so, I mean, like, they feel like their news is not making it on the results
Bad articles that are right wing are coming up for things that they shouldn't be.
You think they
for.
Come up more often?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. One more question along these lines, and then I have I'm going to step out. It's going to be more. Then I have a great question after this one. So once we get to this one, do you think there are a number of high up employees in search who would have altered search results to defeat Trump if they thought they could have done it?
Oh, that's a really good question. So, you asked about something that was surprising.
Okay.
I'm going to go back to that. So, one thing that really surprised me is the, like, Google scale is so big.
Right.
Both from a code perspective, from a user perspective, and from an employee perspective. Like, there are tens of thousands of employees at Google. I think there are 7,000 people just in the New York office. And so, one thing that's...
Wait, 10K total, 7K in New York? Wouldn't most of them be...
No. Tens of thousands of employees.
I think 10K, like, there could be 50K or something.
Yeah. I think there are more like 100K.
Okay,
but
gotcha.
I'm not sure exactly how many
that makes sense.
But
7% in New York makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Even if it's not, it could be 3%, it could be... Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, so tens of thousands of employees, 7K are in New York. It takes some really strong leaders, like strong, bold people to cause any kind of change within Google.
Yeah.
And I got to know some of the names of these people who were really fighting for justice within Google. I don't want to call them out specifically or anything, but
sure.
But there are actually many amazing people at Google who they must spend so many hours per week focusing on just making positive change in the company. And I could imagine
in what sense, like
it could be that so that there was a recent issue with Google's machine learning tools being used by the Department of Defense.
Okay.
And I don't know the details of that.
All right.
I should say, but there were employees who posted a public. So first, there were employees who internally were sending things out about this, like, hey. Like, what's up with this deal?
Yeah.
What's going on with this? And there were other people who kind of joined in, like, oh, well, I have this information, and it seems bad. So let's get some more information about it. So, like, there are people who organize employees internally to help fight ethics issues. I believe, like, in order to do something like that, you kind of have to be a radical person.
Yeah.
And so, with all that being said, yes, there are probably people in search who would have sacrificed their jobs to help influence the election to prevent Trump from being president.
Wow.
Yeah, I totally believe that there are people who would have that desire.
Yeah.
Now, did...
Could they have done it?
I
don't. Yeah,
probably
well,
not.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I happen.
You would
to
have
think,
to have a lot of people banded together to make something like that happen.
Well, I happen to think that there's never, like, there's rarely someone behind the curtain pulling the strings. But I think that a lot of problems come in just by all these people doing their day to day work, and then, you know, these problems come up and nobody focuses on it, and then you could have bias that way.
Yeah, it's really easy to focus on stuff task by task and not take a step back and think about the larger picture. Like, what are the ethical issues that are coming because of my changes? Now, I think Google does a really good job about asking those questions from a user privacy perspective.
Yeah.
But maybe not from an ethics perspective. But
right.
it's a really hard problem, and I don't want to bash Google for it, because I think the entire tech industry isn't good about this.
It was funny. When I was listening to the Sundar's thing, I mean, I actually didn't like listening to him that much. I felt like he was dodging a lot of questions. But one of the questions I thought was ridiculous was like, if I go from this seat to that seat, the senator or congressman said, I don't know, I wasn't paying attention to who it was. He's like, if I move from here to here, does Google know about it? And he's like, I don't know. And then he goes, you're paid like $1 billion. How could you not know that? But it's like, I feel like the answer is probably, you know, no, the phone doesn't know that directly, but maybe someone can get that indirectly or through a bot. So,
right.
Yeah, but it's good to hear that they actually take the privacy portion of it seriously, at least internally.
Yeah.
Okay, so to end up with the pointed questions that I got from online, I want to sum up the search with a question that I wrote, which hopefully I think could kind of give us an idea of, you know, what the culture is around search. Or maybe this is a good question. I don't know. I thought of it last night. So here it is. I'm going to give you three philosophies mm-hmm. when it comes to search results. And the question is, of these three, which are valued most and least by employees and leadership? Number one, distribution of search results should reflect the truth of the situation. Number two, distribution of search results should reflect the distribution of sites and content on the internet properly weighted. And number three, search results should contain a broad diversity on the first page.
Yeah, that's a really, really great question, and I honestly don't know the answer.
You know, did they talk about all three?
No, it's more Google search it's only one team at Google.
But do they say like...
And I don't have any insight into...
What if they say like, this one I think is like, this page I think is more factual, but this page is different from the first page, so this should also be an option on the first, or it should be like, well, this third page is actually like more common on the internet, so I think that should be first. So I feel like there's...
Yeah, I think the question is a really good one, but I don't know the answer because I'm not... I never worked with the search team, and I feel like I would have to have a better working relationship with
them. If I were in Congress, that's what I would have asked the CEO the other day. Although I don't know if that was the reason for the hearing, but that would have been what I was interested in. Okay, so, all right. So now the next section is the James Damore memo.
Great.
You were at, don't worry, I'm not going to make you give like a counter manifesto or anything like that on the show. There's enough said about it on the internet, I think. So you were at Google when James Damore was fired for writing that memo titled Google's Ideological Echo Chamber.
Yes.
First of all, did you find out about the memo internally through Google coworkers or communication from leadership, or did you find out like everybody else on social media?
I found out actually through Jeff Jenkins, former Foursquare employee, my former manager, and current Google employee.
So you found out from another Google employee.
Yes.
Okay. And so, he messaged you directly.
He didn't message me directly. We actually have a group chat. It's like with a few former Foursquare employees in it. And yeah, Jeff posted. He just posted the link to it with no context.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is like. I think he probably just posted it because he thought we should know.
It's like newsflash.
Yeah, he's like, you should know about this.
And newsflash, and here's what I bet happened. Oh, no, this is just, Jeff could correct me if I'm wrong. I bet he's like, newsflash, and then let me subtitle it. And then I know if I was doing it, I would spend a few minutes on the subtitle and be like, this is not worth it. Let me just send out the link.
Yeah, maybe that's exactly what happened. Yeah. I'm sure he couldn't find the words, but if you know.
Yeah.
For those of you listening, you don't know Jeff Jenkins, but he's a wonderful person, and I know that he was outraged by the memo, and that's why he couldn't find the words. So he just posted it,
right.
No context. That was it. So I clicked on it, like, oh, what is this? And like this was in July.
The story, I think, broke, it was somewhere around there. Yeah.
So the story broke summer. In August, like early August.
Oh, externally. I see. So you knew before.
Yes. I knew at least 1 week, but probably a couple of weeks before it broke the news.
Yeah.
Externally. And so I read it and I was enraged. And the thing that really like got to me, it wasn't that someone had these opinions. Like, of course people have these opinions. There's nothing new.
Yeah.
If you're a woman in the world, you have heard someone say this before. What enraged me was that he wrote it in such a scientific way that if you weren't reading it critically, then you might just take it for fact. And that like really enraged me because it's like, oh man, like I'm a person in STEM. I love math. I've written up like scientific things before, and it just felt like how can you use science in this way? Or you're using this scientific language, but you're not actually backing up your claims with facts. Like if you actually clicked on the links, a lot of them went to Wikipedia articles and not like
sure
actual scientific articles and stuff. Yeah. So that was the thing that like really enraged me. And I had this moment like, should I share this with my team? And my team, the forms team, is just so great. And I think I knew that if I shared it with people on the team, what their reaction would be. They would be let me take a step back. I had this moment like, should I share it with the team? Should I post it in the team chat?
Right, right. It might be worth just not doing that sometimes.
I thought about it. I was like, no, because I was so enraged. I was like, you know what? It's just going to make everyone on the team mad.
Yeah.
So I was like, it's just better if they don't know. I honestly didn't think like, oh, this guy should be fired. I didn't even think it was that noteworthy.
Right.
I saw that he put his name on it, and that was surprising. I was like, wow, this person, they're dumb enough to put their name on this? Okay. And then I also thought in that first initial moment, like, God, it would really suck to work with this person. Like, I wonder how many women this person has worked with. And then I actually looked him up. I found his internal employee page, saw that he was an interviewer, and got more angry. Because then I thought, like, oh, how many women didn't get a job at Google because this guy interviewed them?
Well, what if this is not on my question, just a thought experiment. Mm-hmm. What if they asked you, hey, Miriam, would you be willing to do it like a one-on-one talk with him and see what see if you can hash things out? Would you have done it?
Yeah, I would have. In fact, there was a group that got together and did a like an anonymous chat setup thing. So I did have a conversation with someone who agreed with the sentiments in the memo. And we actually had a really great conversation. And I think it was a positive interaction. So yeah, I would have talked to this guy.
So I want to get a sense, like, what was it like working at Google during those months? Were the people in the office kind of eager to talk about it, or were people doing everything they could to avoid the issue? Were the people in the lunch table talking about it and you're like, I'm going to get up now? Like, sometimes I have to do that here, different issues, but yeah.
I think a lot of people were afraid to talk about it. There a lot of people were talking about it and being very vocal, like, I really don't agree with this. I can't believe that you would say something like this. And I really appreciate that those people did that. But one thing that happened, and I don't think a lot of people have talked about this so much on the internet, but it was a big thing internally. Some of the people who opposed the memo most vocally actually got doxxed.
So that means that their address was posted online? Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
make sure.
So they posted stuff internally about how they disagreed with the article, and then people who agreed with the memo took screenshots and posted it online, and then it kind of spiraled out of control. And some of these people, their address got leaked. They were threatened, and all for comments that they posted internally.
On a private forum.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a really bad thing, and it made people scared to say anything. Because people who agreed with the memo were afraid to say it because this guy got fired for having these views. Or actually, one thing that bothered me,
some of them were like, well, we're afraid to talk, so we're going to make them afraid to talk too.
Yeah, I'm sure that was part of it. And I also think like one thing that Google did badly was not say exactly why he got fired.
That came up at a company meeting here at Foursquare. Did you know that?
No.
Somebody asked that anonymously at the company meeting. I think the question was like, what's our stance on James Damore getting fired? And yeah. I think the answer from our was like, Google said that he violated their employment, their code of conduct. They didn't say he violated Google code of conduct. The answer was very scripted. Google says that he violated their code of conduct, and aside from that, no comment. It was basically what we got.
There was no...
Which is probably the right thing to do.
I'm sure it was hard. Because on the one hand, it's like, okay, a lot of people probably felt uncomfortable working with him after that. After he posted, not just because of his views, but because he decided to post it so publicly.
Yeah, I mean, to me that says he like is at least willing. Maybe he just didn't get it. Like he was just like assigned to do this, so he's like, all right, I'll do it. But he could have also just been willing to be more upfront about it and have that conversation.
Yeah, who knows exactly what all happened?
Yeah, we don't know him personally, and you know,
I don't think he got fired for having these opinions. I think he got fired because of the actions surrounding the opinions. But Google never really made that clear, and I think that was one thing that made a lot of people uncomfortable if they agreed with parts of the memo.
Sure. Did the internal discussion at Google around diversity and gender change after James Damore was fired? Or did it change for the better or for the worse?
I don't think it changed. Like,
didn't change at all.
I mean, I'm trying to think. I don't think that there was a specific shift in... there were already a lot of diversity meetings and a lot of really good internal classes about bias and about gender and about microaggressions, and there have been a lot of good Google studies on like what makes a good engineer that were at odds with what James Damore was saying in his memo. So all of these things were already talked about internally before the memo. I think what happened after the memo was that it made people more afraid to post things publicly. But also it made people talk in smaller groups about what was going on. So
It didn't change the direction of the... I think what you're trying to say, it didn't change the direction of the discussion, but it changed how the discussion was taking place.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay, yeah. So I want to get into some of the specifics around this, but so I guess the first question is that we kind of brought up at the beginning was, like, do you think that Google is a better environment for one gender or another? You mentioned one interview said it is not a women-friendly workplace. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the specifics around that?
Yes. So I think any large organization is going to reflect society, and you're not going to be able to get around that once you hit a certain number of people, right? So
yeah.
Just like larger society, I think it's harder for women at Google, but it's harder for women, period. So I don't think it's a Google specific thing.
So it's not a Google problem. It's a, but what were the specific complaints that your interviewer came up with? Like maybe,
I honestly don't remember her specific complaints, but I can't.
Well, you have, do you have any complaints?
I honestly had a really good experience at Google overall, from that perspective, but I did have one interesting, I had one meeting once where I was the engineer for this meeting, and it was like, it was a product discussion kind of, basically I had a meeting with another team to talk about, what features they were going to be implementing over the next quarter or two that were related to something that I was working on.
Okay.
So it was my work, my engineering work that was being impacted.
Right.
And I scheduled this meeting with...
So they're it's basically about work that you're set to do.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think I made that pretty clear in the when I scheduled the meeting.
Yeah.
And I'm scheduled it with another engineer on their team, their product manager, and my product manager.
Right.
So the product manager of the other team did not make eye contact with me the entire meeting. Like, he didn't address me at all. He spoke directly to the product manager for my team.
Oh, that's annoying.
And he didn't ask me a single question.
Yeah.
He directed all of his questions, everything, to the product manager for my team. And the product manager asked me some of the questions. Like, he
so
redirected.
Basically, like, I asked this person and sitting next to me, and they have to ask another person sitting next to them.
Yeah.
It's like, just... What, it's kind of like the Office Space. Well, why don't you just ask them directly?
Yeah, it made me feel...
Why doesn't the engineer take the specs from the customer?
It made me feel really uncomfortable because it's like, okay, I scheduled this meeting, and I'm the person who's working on
this. You're supposed to be leading the meeting.
Like, why? Well...
Or you scheduled leading, but you had the other person lead.
It made sense for the other person to be talking most of the time.
Right.
But it was very... It's very strange. And
you feel like they felt more comfortable talking to the other person.
I don't know.
You don't know. Okay.
Yeah, and that's what it is with microaggressions. You never know exactly what was going on in the other person's brain.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
It could be that the other person was a product guy, and he felt more comfortable talking to the product guy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it made me feel small.
Yeah.
And like it made me feel like
even if he meant nothing by it, he didn't consider. He didn't have the. I don't know. He didn't have the social skills to consider it that.
Right. And, and I was the only woman in the room. And it's like, okay, these three men are having a nice conversation, but I'm just sitting here like, what?
Yeah.
It almost felt like, why am I here? Even though the meeting could not have happened without me being there. It's like,
well, I know how this works. Like, you're the person who's going to be doing the actual work. And they're all just talking about it like you're not in the room. That sucks. I've been there too. Yeah.
So that was the worst thing that happened to me at Google, which is pretty good.
I can say this is for over a year. That's not bad.
Yeah, from a gendered perspective, like that was probably the worst thing to happen.
Yeah.
And I heard other stories from other people that were much worse. Stories of harassment, and some of these have been even posted publicly.
Some of these happen in a lot of workplaces. Some people just don't get it. I don't know. It's absurd that like people don't know when they're crossing the line sometimes.
Yes. I know of people who were harassed. I know of people who had issues with clients, if they were either an engineer or a salesperson. Like clients outside of the company.
Yeah.
Either being inappropriate.
It's hard for the company to do. Well, I mean, right, they're not, they can't train the clients, so.
Exactly. But,
yeah.
Yeah, so I do believe that it's harder for women in Google, even if my experience was largely neutral.
Okay. Cool, fair enough. All right, two more questions specifically about the memo. I know this is not the most comfortable one, but first, we're going to start with like two claims that he made in the memo. Not about the men and women stuff. This is just claims about stuff that happens in Google.
Yeah.
So I was wondering whether it was true or what he meant by it. Maybe he was saying something. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's Well, let me just start with the first one.
Yeah.
The first one, he said that there are programs, mentoring, and classes only for people with a certain gender or race. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, sure. So there's a class called Stretch for Women. And it's a career-focused class that's targeted specifically towards women. And I don't know that you can't sign up if you're a man, but it's like very, very targeted towards women.
So do they tackle issues that women are more likely to be...
yes.
So more likely to face?
Like, yes.
Did you take that class or did you just
think about it? Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay.
And there were other classes and programs too. And mentorship, I'm sure. There are lots of affinity groups. There's Women at Google. There's Black Googlers. There's Gaglers. So there are all these groups within the organization, for sure. And there's mentoring within those groups that, you know, if you tried to get a mentoring, if you tried to be mentored through Women at Google and you're not a woman, I'm sure that would be considered kind of strange and like maybe you wouldn't be very welcome.
Well, what do you think the purpose of these like programs are in general? Like, do you think it's to make people feel more comfortable if they're kind of, outside of if they're coming from a different culture and they're not really sure, different culture might not be the right word, but different, they just, is it... I'm going to get the answer from you. What do you think the purpose is?
So all of these groups are kind of aimed at people who are other. They're some sort of other. They're not part of the majority in some
gotcha.
Way.
Okay.
At Google. And I think that they exist because if you are a white man at Google, you are going to work with lots of other white men. That's
right.
Just a fact.
Yeah.
And so it's much easier for you to find people who look like you. I'm not certain, but I would guess that a lot of these programs got started because the people who started them saw that for white cishet men in Google, they already had these mentorships. They already had these informal or maybe even formal relationships, but they were harder to find if you didn't fit into that category.
Gotcha. Like people look at you and they make assumptions, and so it's sort of like, how do you deal with that?
Well, it's not just that. It's just much easier to, grow in your career if you see someone who's like you in the position that you want.
Right. I see.
And I'm not saying that as a woman, I couldn't be mentored by a man.
Right.
I've been mentored by plenty of men. But it's easier
it's easier for someone who can say, I've been where you've been.
There's that aspect, but there's also if these relationships are forming informally for a certain group, but they're not forming informally for another group as much, then it helps to have a more formal process for that other, for those other groups.
Yeah.
Especially if if you're seeing, like, if depending on your affinity groups, you could be the only person in your entire, like, org that fits this certain description.
Right, right.
And so finding other people who are like you can be difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
And so just building that network and having that support. It could really make a big difference to your you know, work output, your career, and your happiness at work.
Yeah, yeah. So he also said that Google sets org-level OKRs for increased representation, which can incentivize illegal discrimination. That's just a direct quote from the memo. Mm-hmm. Were you aware of any of those OKRs, and what were they actually like?
I don't know what OKRs he's specifically referring to. So one thing that he may be referring to now,
I
no worries. So I don't know of any specific OKR related to this, but let's say, Google wants to be more diverse. They look at the numbers. And,
right.
And Google does want to make sure that they're giving access to more people. They don't want to.
Right.
The company doesn't want to exclude any category of engineer.
Yeah, except bad engineer.
Exactly. Only bad. Only want to exclude bad engineers. So if they're losing out women. They're losing out on hiring women that are good engineers, and they want to fix that problem.
Yeah.
So one thing that there are lots of things that you can do to like fix that problem.
Yeah. I'm not asking you like what they can do. I was just asking if you are aware of any of the OKRs, but
yeah. So
you know, or if it affected you at all, or you just never saw them.
Yeah, I never specifically saw them, but I think what he was referring to here is stuff like the I think it's called the Rooney Rule, where for every open position, you must interview one woman before you give the role to someone.
I see. Is that like a general rule at Google that they do that?
No, it's not a general rule, but.
Or sometimes they do.
I don't remember any team specifically saying that they did this, but
yeah,
I believe that some teams do this.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah.
And it's to increase the likelihood of, decrease the likelihood of missing out on a good candidate.
Yeah, yeah, or just kind of hiring, talking to the same people over and over. I could kind of see that.
Yeah, exactly.
So one last, did you have something to say on that?
Yeah, so there's nothing illegal about that, and it's not discrimination, because you're not hiring anyone based on their gender. You're just making sure that you're opening up the role to a wider set of people.
Gotcha. All right. One last thing, the suggestions in the memo. In the memo, he made a few suggestions on making the Google environment more friendly for women. And the ones that popped out at me, he said there should be more pair programming and collaboration, and to honor part-time work and make it less stressful. And I kind of thought, I actually want that for myself.
Right?
Like those are great ideas just in general.
Yeah.
I think they carry specific implications when you say, like, this is to retain women. I don't know if it would have that effect or not, but like those are things I want personally. So I just want to ask you, do you think that Google has a problem with being non-collaborative, or maybe adding unnecessary stress to their leadership roles?
Potentially, but I can't really speak to any of those things.
Yeah. Oh, is your team collaborative?
Yes. My team was very collaborative.
So your team was very collaborative.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. Cool. And awesome. So Google published some results on the thing that mattered most for successful teams, and that thing was psychological safety. So the ability to say, or it's like the freedom to speak your mind on a team without fear of, or just without fear. Like there could be a lot of things that you could be scared of to say, I guess.
Right.
But just being free to.
I got away with, I got away with letting down my filter a little bit last week when I did the company talent show. So that was fun. We'll play that on the show, on our New Year's show. But anyway.
So psychological safety doesn't mean that you can say anything.
Right.
That's not what that means. It's more that...
I mean, I feel like that psychological safety doesn't exist when it comes to discussions around this memo. So,
Yeah. So I would say that my team at Google had really high psychological safety.
That's good. And I've been on teams like that where everyone's I don't like to sit in a meeting and see everyone like wooden faced or poker faced. I like it when people are emotional and you can like see their ups and downs. Yeah. And you kind of know where they're. Hopefully they're not always miserable. Yeah. But like if you could see someone's up and downs and you kind of know that you're at least getting the more authentic person.
Yeah. And, like we weren't afraid to be like, this thing was bad.
Yeah.
Like this thing on the team was bad. And talk about why. And then we could fix that problem more easily because we could be honest about what wasn't working. And I thought it was really, really, really good.
Cool.
But yeah, I think having more pair programming is a good thing and more collaboration. Yeah, sure. And I'm sure that there are teams where that is an issue. I just happen to be on a really good team.
Cool. I think that was very helpful. I think this is, what people need to hear. I think the discussion that we just had was very different than the stuff that you read online, which is much less helpful. So just in conclusion, let me just ask you one more question. What number in the country are you in foosball?
In the
yeah, aren't you like?
So according to the International Table Soccer Federation ranking, I am the number one American woman in foosball.
Okay, so international adventurer, national champion, top-rated engineer. Mariam, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Max.
Looking forward to having you start back here in Foursquare tomorrow.
I'm looking forward to coming back to you.
That's the show. Remember to check out the website at localmaxradio.com. If you want to contact me, the host, or ask a question that I can answer on the show, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. This show is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and more. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe to The Local Maximum on one of these platforms and to follow my Twitter account at Max Sklar. Have a great week.
Feel the power.